Welcome to the Dacus Report, hosted by Pacific Justice Institute founder and president Brad Dacus. For 25 years, PJI has counseled, represented, and defended people whose religious freedoms, parental rights, or sanctity of life have been obstructed or violated, all free of charge. We leave no one behind and level the playing field for Americans as they are subjected to the tyranny of the powerful. Now, here's Brad Dacus.
Welcome to the Dacus Report. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Brad Dacus, president of the Pacific Justice Institute. On today's show, we're going to deal with a number of issues. And to help me do that, we have with us here a special guest, Dr. Jameson Taylor, who is a senior fellow with the American Family Association. Welcome to the show, Jameson. Glad to have you on the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me on today, Brad.
Yeah, now you're involved in a lot of different things that are going on. You are interactive. You're watching what's happening among the states in terms of their legislatures, in terms of different bills that are being offered. I know we at Pacific Justice Institute, we love to work with people like you and organizations like AFA that share the same convictions about the importance of defending religious freedom, parents' rights, the family unit, the sanctity of human life. And so I love to have you on the program to talk about some of the things that are taking place and to get your insight into some of these issues as a matter of policy and the impact it may have on us across the country and in particularly in individual states that we're focusing on. So today, I'd like to look at, in particular, something that's happening in Mississippi. It's something that's called the Radical ART Bill, A-R-T Bill. My understanding, this has nothing to do with painting and sculptures, right?
Yeah, that's right. Nothing to do with art. So we're talking about artificial reproductive technology, IVF. And we were talking about before the show, this comes from a recent Alabama state Supreme Court decision that is now having a potentially national impact.
Okay, so the state Supreme Court decision, this was involving the state Supreme Court saying, hey, the fact is, when you conceive something outside the womb, you conceive something and it's a zygote and it has a clear DNA definition of a human being, that's a person. And that will be treated as a person. If you kill that person, that's effectively, I guess, murder. I mean, exactly what did the Supreme Court say that got people so alarmed and concerned?
So there's a case before the Alabama State Supreme Court. Again, this is not the U.S. Supreme Court, but this is the Alabama State Supreme Court. And that's important to realize because that means that what the court decided upon only applies to the state of Alabama. It does not apply to any other state. And we'll kind of get into that in a minute as we talk about the federal reaction to this. But what happened in Alabama was that there had been some couples that had gone through IVF and they had embryos that were in a storage facility. Well, an individual entered the storage facility and those embryos were destroyed. Those couples sued under Alabama's wrongful death statute. So for the non-attorneys out there, what that means is basically wrongful death essentially applies to a situation that's somewhat like murder. We're not talking about abortion here. We're talking about if, for instance, you hit someone with your car and that person dies, and that might be considered a wrongful death. So it's not quite murder, but certainly there's a wrong that's been committed, and obviously someone has died. So these couples sued the IVF clinic under Alabama's wrongful death statute. Now, Alabama, unlike a lot of states, has a right to life in their state constitution. So the Supreme Court looked at that, and they looked at Alabama's wrongful death statute, and they decided that, yes, a wrongful death has occurred here, and so this lawsuit is legitimate.
Right. Now wrongful death, I think that's a really good distinction, right? Because it's not, like, murder requires intent. You know, mens rea, you have to intend to kill someone. Wrongful death isn't necessarily someone, you know, wanting deliberately to kill these embryos. It could be the result of just an accident. They accidentally knock the petri dish off and it shatters, right. Yeah. And that kind of a thing. So, you know, I can see right there where there'd be some concerns for some people in that industry thinking, shoot, if I accidentally, you know, break this Petri dish or something, I could be sued for wrongful death, which has very severe, severe consequences, right?
Yeah, because what we're talking about there is, you know, probably criminal liability and certainly a level of civil liability for, you know, wrongfully killing somebody. And so this had a chilling effect on Alabama's IVF industry. And you had several clinics saying, well, we're not comfortable operating under this. And there was immediate pushback by the Alabama state legislature. What they did is basically clarify Alabama's law to say that no, the wrongful death statute does not apply in this case, and so IVF can continue to be offered in Alabama. Now, a lot of pro-lifers were not really very happy with what the legislature did. I think you can make an argument that their response was kind of panicky. It was a little bit overly broad in terms of giving too much leeway to the IVF industry. Nevertheless, the legislature acted and kind of just took this issue off the table. Yeah. At the same time, though, we saw Democrats at the federal level start to look at this and see, oh, wait a minute, we think this is a campaign issue for us. And so we had the very, very radical Illinois Senator Tammy Duckworth introduce a bill, and she's introduced this bill actually for the past few years, but she pushed a bill. It was an opportunity for her to push through a bill that would, in effect, create a statutory federal right to IVF. Now, for listeners to understand who we're dealing with Tammy Duckworth, she has a 100% positive rating, lifetime rating from Planned Parenthood.
She's someone we know has no credibility as far as any respect for the sanctity of human life whatsoever. Right. So this doesn't surprise me that she would be pushing for something like this at a federal level.
Yeah, that's right. So this is a very kind of pro-abortion undertone to this legislative proposal that Tammy Duckworth is putting out there. And so what the bill did is, in creating that statutory right to IVF, there were a lot of questions that were left unanswered. So, for instance, well, if you have a statutory right to IVF, then who's supposed to pay for this, for instance? Is this now, are we talking about a national insurance mandate so that everyone's private insurance is now going to have to cover IVF? And that means, for instance, let's say that you're 60 years old and you have private insurance, you have no intention of doing IVF yourself. Well, your insurance rates, your private insurance rates are going to go up to cover these very expensive procedures that only a very small number of people are doing. Well, and then what about Medicaid? What about Medicare? Which, yeah, Medicaid is government-funded insurance that's provided to low-income people. Medicare is government-funded insurance that's provided to older people. Well, are we creating a statutory right so that Medicaid and Medicare will have to cover IVF procedures? You know, that was left unanswered. What about the doctors who may have ethical objections to IVF? Because, you know, there are a lot of different questions that arise through IVF, which we can get into in a little bit. But some doctors don't want to do IVF. They don't want to do it because it often requires, quote unquote, selective reduction.
Yeah. Now go ahead. I was just going to say, when we're talking about selective reduction, I mean, Jameson, we're talking about the deliberate decision to exterminate, to kill. So we're going to choose these embryos. We're going to fertilize a bunch of them. We're going to choose these two or three. We're going to implant those. The rest of them, we're going to discard those. Those aren't quite as, you know, whatever, pretty as the others, or you know, whatever they're going for. So that really bothers me, because it seems that is on its face a deliberate, premeditated effort to discard human life from the get-go.
That's right. Yeah. So you have this, you know, you have these questions of selective reduction, which is really, selective reduction is just a fancy term for abortion, you know, as you pointed out. Other questions, especially for medical professionals to think about is the federal definition of what's called assisted reproductive technology. And this is the definition that Tammy Duckworth was citing to. That definition is very broad. It's left open-ended. Well, so then suddenly, are we talking about cloning? Are we talking about animal-human hybrids? This just, you know, raised a lot of questions among people. Now, fortunately, what we saw at the federal level was Mississippi Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith stepped up and objected to the bill. The Democrats were trying to push this bill through the Senate. They were using a special maneuver to do that. Fortunately, Cindy Hyde-Smith was able to object to that, and that stopped the bill. But you're now seeing this issue come up again. And so you're even seeing Republicans in the House are positioning themselves to potentially support IVF legislation that, again, is kind of leaning toward this idea of creating a quote-unquote federal statutory right to IVF. And yet, the way that I think about this is going to result in a lot of lawsuits. There's going to be insurance coverage lawsuits. There are going to be religious freedom lawsuits. I see this not even as an IVF bill. I see this as a lawsuit bill.
Right. I know we at Pacific Justice Institute could easily find ourselves challenging legislation that violates the conscience of individuals, the conscience of doctors, of medical institutions. It seems that they're really not examining the law like they should, and look at and the facts of it. It seems that there should, in fact, be provisions in the law where if someone is deliberately or exercising even gross negligence or negligently causing the death of a zygote or an embryo, that there should be consequences for that. But this kind of legislation takes away that culpability, and in so doing, complete disrespect for the sanctity of human life, much less what the other provisions, which I didn't even think of, frankly, Jameis, until you mentioned it, involving other possible applications. I mean, our society is becoming more and more twisted and depraved in how it views marriage, how it views faith, how it views the sanctity of human life. So I don't think these are far-fetched hypotheticals as far as using it to hybrid clone a human with an animal and these other kinds of possibilities. That's something very serious, and I'm just sad to see that we have politicians trying to ramrod through legislation like this that is only going to be problematic in the future, and also very problematic for states, because if this is federalized, this is going to inhibit or tie the hands of states like Mississippi to do reasonable, thought out, responsible legislation.
Did you know that PJI is the only legal defense nonprofit in America that serves state citizens by fighting state legislatures across the country to ensure unconstitutional or corrupt bills don't become unconstitutional or corrupt laws? That's right. For over 12 years, PJI's Center for Public Policy has generated success by standing firm in opposition to unconstitutional or immoral state bills, which makes it easier for our allies in the legislatures to kill these kinds of wrongheaded and even depraved pieces of legislation. Keep current on PJI's work on all the legal challenges we face on a daily basis by signing up for our Legal Insider email newsletter at pji.org. Now, back to the Dacus Report.
Welcome back. You know, folks, we at Pacific Justice Institute, we've noticed an uptick, if you will, with states engaging in tyranny for the purpose of shutting down pro-life clinics, trying to use rules, regulations, basically going on a witch hunt to try to shut them down. I know we're right now defending probably the two largest pro-life clinics in the state of California. If you know of any pro-life clinics having this kind of tyrannical bombardment with investigations or materials or resources or threats to sue them, please have them contact us. They can go to our website, pji.org. Also, on our website, you can sign up to get our free e-newsletter, the Legal Insider. Once again, it's pji.org, pji.org. We want to keep you updated with what's happening. This show does a great job covering a lot of cases and issues, but it doesn't cover all of them. And that's where the Legal Insider comes in. So I encourage you to take advantage of that on our website, pji.org. Now I'd like to get back with our guest, Dr. Jameson Taylor. Jameson, another issue that we've been having to face in our country is an administration that is reportedly attempting to put into place regulations that will basically be, I guess, a legacy for his administration, but are regulations that have a lot of people very, very concerned. Let's talk about some of those serious threats to many Americans in the form of new regulations coming down from this administration.
So this administration, the way I think of it is, if you think about Joe Biden, you see someone who doesn't seem to be very competent. He doesn't seem to be all there. Likewise with Kamala Harris, something seems off about her. What I see there is the distraction of incompetence. But behind that incompetence, there are a lot of really, really smart bureaucrats that understand how to use the federal rulemaking process to get what they want. And as Americans are kind of experiencing this sense where the economy is not as strong as it should be, they're finding it harder to own a home. They're seeing that food prices are increasing, fuel prices are increasing, all kinds of problems. A lot of that is not coming from laws that Congress has passed. Rather, it's coming from rules that federal agencies and state agencies are putting into effect. And a lot of times, the statutory basis, the legal basis of these rules is a question mark. It's, you know, we're not sure, does the agency really, for instance, have power to say that every single puddle in the United States is a waterway? You know, there are laws, basically, there are federal laws that apply to navigable waterways, rivers, things like that, you know, that may cross state lines. Okay, that makes sense under the Clean Waters Act. But what about a puddle that doesn't connect in any way to a river? Yet we see federal agencies are claiming this power.
Yeah. I know that the court in the past has given great deference to bureaucrats, basically saying, okay, Congress passes a law giving agencies powers. In the past, I know the Supreme Court has held, well, you know, if they can somehow rationally explain how this regulation is in some way related in some capacity to the powers given to them, that's good enough. That's good enough. And that's why, like the example you cited, we have these ridiculous things where you have, the EPA coming out and saying, we're going to require that puddles be monitored by the government in little tiny ponds, under legislation that was actually intended to deal with government regulation of rivers and large moving bodies of water. I mean, we see these kinds of outrageous regulations, and it looks like that there's a good possibility that this Supreme Court is going to say, not so fast, this isn't really constitutional. And if you're a bureaucratic agency and you come down with a regulation, you have to show that regulation is specifically authorized and within your purview, courtesy of legislation from Congress. Is that a correct understanding of the issue that we're facing and that the Supreme Court will be addressing?
Yeah, that's right. So there's been this issue really since 1984. There was a case called Chevron. And as a result of that case, there's a doctrine that came out of the U.S. Supreme Court called Chevron deference. Basically, you know, as you said, it gives great deference to agency interpretations of federal laws. And then increasingly, a lot of states have adopted this idea of Chevron deference. Basically, it's been a green light for agencies to do whatever they want. I think in a certain way, Chevron was passed from the very optimistic idea that, well, agencies probably most of the time are going to do the right thing. Instead, what we have found is that agencies, which are made up of just regular people like you and I, what they tend to do is to pursue more power and more money. And if the courts allow them, and the courts have allowed them, if they allow them to get more power and more funding, that's what they're going to do. And so we see agencies like the EPA are out of control. We might see, for instance, the Department of Labor, and we can talk about that in a minute. They are out of control. And it's Chevron deference that is letting them exercise this really, it's really dictatorial power.
Yeah, I have heard the phrase, absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's what we're seeing. We're seeing these bureaucratic agencies. They've been given this power under the Chevron doctrine, to do just basically anything they could rationally explain as being related to their legislative authority, and being given great deference to do all kinds of things that the average American just scratches their head and says, "What? How can the government do that?" On a federal level, and I also mentioned we have that same problem even on state levels. Especially in states like California and blue states like New York, Oregon, Washington, where it's very problematic and there's often very little recourse for individuals to be able to challenge these kinds of hideous actions. When people go through the administrative process, the problem with that is when you challenge something on appeal through the administrative process with regard to regulation, oftentimes you have the judge basically being the agency, and the jury and the, they're all the same entity. You really don't have an opportunity for a free and fair hearing, if you will, and due process because of the powers that administrative agencies have, bureaucratic agencies have over even challenges to their regulations. So this could be a huge, huge game changer. And I think that as we look at this case, I think a lot of Americans are saying, well, what is regulations, deference? I don't think they really understand exactly how significant this precedent could be should it come down the way we hope from the Supreme Court, getting rid of the Chevron deference. What do you think that would be replaced with, by the way?
Well, it's going to be interesting to watch. I think to kind of follow up on what you just mentioned, yeah, I agree. A lot of Americans don't realize that it's really rulemaking that is crushing the American dream. It's these kind of agency fiats. There's no right of appeal, really. There's not a lot of oversight. And the courts and Congress have let the agencies do this. So what happens is basically Congress might pass a law, and maybe they're not very precise as to how that's supposed to be implemented. Then an agency goes in and implements the law in a way that they see best. At a minimum, it's going to be whatever's most convenient for them. And that's in a way what this case is that we're talking about. There are two cases right now before the Supreme Court. One's called Loper. The other's called Relentless. They have been consolidated. This has to do with basically fishing boats that are small, kind of family-owned businesses. The government is requiring these fishing boats to have a monitor on their boat that costs $700 a day. So these small fishermen are suing the government saying, hey, the law doesn't allow you to require us to have these monitors on our boats that are going to cost $700 a day. And as a result of you doing this, it's going to put us out of business. But that's an example of how government regulation is crushing the American dream. It's certainly crushing the American dream for these fishermen.
Yeah, it destroys points of entry for businesses to not just exist, but also for new businesses to come into the market. Folks, if you'd like to get involved, if you want to learn more about these kinds of regulations and how you can respond to those, I encourage you to take a look at the website of American Family Association. It's real easy to get there. It's simply afa.net. Jameson, I greatly appreciate the work that you're doing. Pacific Justice Institute, we just delight in partnering with you and the American Family Association, as we do with other ministries out there, working to make a real difference, to keep us aware and alert. And oftentimes, those efforts are what allow us to do what we do even better, which is file lawsuits and also work on a state level with regards to legislation and making a real impact and also getting people involved. Thank you for the great work you're doing, and keep it up. And I look forward to next time we have you on our program.
Thank you, Brad.
Yeah. Thank you, Jameson.
We would love the opportunity to continue to serve you. Just visit pji.org and click the Legal Insider button to sign up for our email newsletter. At PJI, we help individual employees, employers, business owners, pastors, students, citizens of every stripe through our practical resources, counsel, representation, and defense, all free of charge at pji.org. PJI is an island of stability and assurance in our ever-churning sea of legal and societal chaos. We are here for you.
So folks, just remember, it's our God-given freedoms we're talking about. Now, let's choose to keep them. I'm Brad Dacus, president of the Pacific Justice Institute. Let's continue the fight for your freedoms.